Welcome to the Advisor Advocates Podcast. My name is Garrett Lill. I'm a certified financial planner and former advisor. And I started Advisor Advocates in this podcast to share with other advisors some of the experience that I like to say I accidentally accumulated over the course of my 13-year career, especially around the areas of the industry involving transitions from one firm to the other, advisor recruiting, M&A deals, things of that nature. Interesting thing for advisors that I've experienced in my career is that advisors are often on an island. We don't really know what's out there. We don't know what's going on outside the walls of our firm and outside the confines of our own practices. Especially when I was working in the recruiting industry and talking with advisors, there were just so many advisors who didn't know what they didn't know. So the purpose of this podcast and Advisor Advocates is to help bridge that information gap, to help advisors understand a little bit more about what the landscape looks like out there, what options are available to you, and sort of share some of the insights that I've ran into and hopefully answer some of the most common questions that advisors have. I think one of the biggest misconceptions oftentimes in the industry is I think advisors misunderstand the economies of scale, especially when going independent, and basically understanding how big of a book of business you need to have to be able to be successful as an independent advisor or building an independent team. So I think when I was looking at going completely independent, I left an employee role and went into what I kind of referred to as a tuck-in, where I was a part of a team. I own my book, but I was working with an ensemble type practice or a team type of practice of independence. And going totally independent, I didn't know exactly how much it was going to cost, exactly how big my book needed to be. And I Googled this and spent a lot of, you know, several months researching this particular topic. And the range of outcomes that I saw from this research was unbelievable. There were some sources out there that basically said if you didn't have at least $100 million of AUM, you don't need to be independent. Others said that you could start an independent practice with $10 million in AUM. So I really didn't know what I was getting into. So I just kind of dug in and did my own research on it. And this was over 10 years ago. So as the industry has continued to change, I don't know sometimes talking with advisors if they really realize how small of a practice you can have and still be very efficient as an independent advisor. So on this episode, I really want to kind of dive into the economics of that and help advisors kind of understand if you do leave an employee type role or a team role and try to strike out on your own totally independent firm, what exactly you're going to have to replace that you're maybe currently accustomed to having provided for you, and also how much that's going to cost. Because I think when you peel back the layers of that onion, there are a lot of situations where you can replicate what you have with your current firm and spend a fraction of what your current firm may be keeping as a payout. The purpose of this show isn't to knock the employee model or to necessarily say that every advisor should be independent. I am an advocate for independent advisors, but I also definitely don't think every advisor should be independent. There are a lot of situations where the W-2 model makes a lot of sense, and going to work for other firms makes a lot of sense, and being able to plug into what they do. But there are also a lot of advisors who stay because they don't realize how easily they can replicate the practice they currently have as an independent. So I'm just going to walk through the step-by-step process that I went through, and it's also the same process that I see a lot of other advisors going through when they're weighing that decision out, and hopefully help advisors out there kind of understand a little bit more about what the economies of scale look like, especially for smaller independent practices. So the first question that I think an advisor needs to ask when you're trying to decide, can you afford to go independent, is one of the most simple and obvious questions you can ask. And it's also probably one of the most important, and that is, how much money do you need to make when it's all said and done? And this can look a lot different for different advisors, right? There are some advisors who may be in a very captive situation, maybe managing, you know, $50, $75 million at a 25% payout, and they want to go independent, and they know that they're going to lose a large segment of their client book, and they're willing to take a short-term income hit in order to be able to have the independence and to be able to build the practice that they want longer term. And then there are other advisors who are barely making it now, and they're going independent to try to get a pay increase, and they're hoping to keep all of their clients. So on either side of that coin, you have to kind of start with, what does it take to pay your bills, right? Or if you are a team, what does it take at the team level to cover all of your expenses? To keep the math nice and simple, let's just say that there's someone who is an independent individual advisor, and they need to make $100,000 a year to be able to make ends meet, you know, for their family, their household. What would your economics look like if you did decide to go totally independent, and what options do you have, and what are the different payouts for each of those options? So before we dive into this, on the show or in your own personal process of trying to do this math, you really do have to ask a few starter questions to make sure you're going down the right pathway when it comes to the math. Because there are some situations where it may make a lot of sense for you to register your own RIA. There may be other situations where it makes a lot of sense to join a turnkey RIA. And there are some situations where, based on what you're trying to accomplish for yourself right now and for your practice, it might make sense to team up with a local independent firm that you can align yourself with. So we're going to kind of use all three of those as a reference point, or kind of reference all three of those paths as we kind of go along here, because I think there are some situations where any of the three could make sense. So one of the first things you're going to need to do, I mean, literally day one, T0 in this process, at the same time that you're Googling how to start your own firm or how to become an independent financial advisor, or at the same time that you're kind of starting that process of doing some research, you're going to want to ask yourself a few questions about what you're going to need in your practice. Are you going to need office space, or are you okay working from home? And you're going to need to think about your clientele. And, you know, if most of your clients are out of town and you meet virtually anyway, you may not need office space. If your clients are used to you meeting them at their home or at, you know, some type of a public place or a coffee shop or wherever the case may be, there's all kinds of different ways to run a practice nowadays. But if your clients are accustomed to coming to your office, then you're probably going to need an office space that clients can come to. That's going to be one question that you're going to want to ask. You're also going to ask things like branding. Do you need to be associated with a large brand that your clients can identify with? Or are your clients really tied to you and they're comfortable working with you no matter where you are, even if you are independent? And also, do you work well as an individual, or are you looking for a team type of environment where you can lean on other professionals and other colleagues for best practices sharing, or just sometimes people just, they want to be independent, but they really don't want to be by themselves on an island. So how much do you thrive in that team environment versus, you know, being a one-man show, so to speak? But you're going to want to answer these questions at the same time that you're starting to research all of the other things that you're going to be looking at for how to start your own practice, because once you start to ask these questions and start to peel back the layers of that onion, you're going to start to see that you have a lot of paths that you can take with this decision. And the answers to those questions are going to help kind of dictate and drive which of those paths might be the most suitable for you to look at. And it can make a fairly significant difference in how the math plays out. There may be a particular path that you go down that nets a 50% net profit margin for you, but it includes something that you really don't need in your practice. And there may be another path that you can take that nets a 90% profit margin for your business, and it does include everything that you need. So you're going to really want to take a look at really what are you looking to build, and kind of starting that off. And there are more that there are others that you can include in those questions as well, but office branding and how much do you want to have a team built around you, or at least be a part of a team, are going to be three of the big ones that are going to help kind of help drive the first stages of this decision. And they're also going to play a big role in how the math plays out. So at a bare bones minimum starting point, how much do you need to make to pay your bills as an individual or to take care of your family? And we're going to start grossing up from there, right? So starting at the absolute minimum, you're going to have to take care of compliance somehow, some way, and you're going to have errors and omissions insurance. If you do not have those, you're basically setting yourself up. You're basically deciding to play Russian roulette with your practice and just hope that nothing bad happens, and that's not a very good page one of a business plan. So you're going to want to make sure that you've got enough money to cover compliance costs and to cover errors and omissions insurance. Now, for a practice, you know, along the size that we're kind of covering in this podcast, the 25 million or even a $10 million practice, maybe even up to 50 or 100 million, your errors and omissions insurance is going to be a pretty reasonable cost, $2,500 up to maybe $4,000 or $5,000 a year max. It can range quite a bit depending on your record as an advisor, the type of practice that you operate. There's a lot of things that can kind of play into that, and there's a lot of different providers that are out there as well. But general rule of thumb, $3,000-$4,000 is probably kind of in the ballpark of what you can expect to spend on E&O. But compliance can be a very wide range of options. You can handle your compliance yourself. If you do that, you're basically just paying your state filing fees. And I'm not going to bother getting into that on this show and listing out 50 different states and how much it costs, but you're going to pay something for the firm and then usually something for each state that you're registered in. And this can be anywhere from, I don't know, $50 to $500, depending on the state. And you're going to need to do some due diligence on your part and see, do you need to register in every single state? Most states have the de minimis rule that allows you to have a certain number of clients without having to register. So you're going to need to look at your book and decide, okay, how many of these states do I need to be registered in? There's also a few states out there that if you have any clients, or even if you're just trying to get clients in a particular state, you're going to need to be registered. So you'll need to take some inventory in that and see how many states you're going to need to be in. But for the most part, you can, most firms are, especially, you know, the size of practices that we're kind of focusing on this podcast, usually you're not going to be in that many states. So this is going to be a, you know, one, maybe $2,000 annual expense for your registration fees. So the variable in this is going to be, okay, who are you going to pay to take care of your compliance? If you want to do it yourself, you're not paying anything. You're taking a big risk there because there's zero insulation between you and those regulators. You get something wrong, it is straight up between you and them. If they come to you and want to slap you on the wrist, there's nowhere else for you to turn for guidance. A lot of firms will choose to use a third-party compliance consulting firm, and I will admit that my experience of this might be a little bit outdated. It's been a few years since I was an advisor myself, but at the time that I sold my practice, I think I was spending like maybe $6,000-$7,000 a year for compliance consulting. I think that probably has gone up a little bit. I know for sure that there are firms out there in the $10,000-$12,000 a year range. So I would say in most cases, it's going to be really wise for an advisor to spring for that expense, because to try to run an advisory practice without making sure that your compliance is taken care of is kind of like trying to drive a car without tires. It's a really dangerous process to try to undertake if you don't have that nailed down. So because it is so important, especially for new firms that are really kind of, if you're, especially if you're jumping from the employee channel over to an independent and you really don't know what you don't know about running a firm, it's probably not a bad idea to lean on a professional or a specialist in that area. But you got to look at that for yourself. If you only have 12 clients and 8 of them are your family members, yeah, you might be able to get by running it on your own. So compliance can be a couple $1,000s a year for your registration fees. It could be 10 grand a year for a third party. You can also spring for some Cadillac model third parties who will basically sign off to be your chief compliance officer for maybe $30,000-$40,000 a year. And that is way cheaper than going out and hiring your own chief compliance officer. You're certainly not thinking about doing that if you're a $15, $20 million practice. If you're an $80, $90, $100 million practice, then maybe you are looking at some of those Cadillac services from the compliance specialists. Or obviously, if you're a really big firm, you can go out and hire a CCO, and that can vary quite a bit in compensation, depending on who you find and how much their demands are. But for a fairly simple generic example here, say you've got a $10 million practice generating $100,000 a year, it's probably not a bad idea to outsource that for at least the first year. And I think you can probably find that for less than $10,000, but it probably is going to be more than five. So let's call that, you know, $8,000 to $10,000 for outsourced consulting services. And then you're going to want to start to look at the bells and whistles, right? These are not necessarily requirements for a practice. Compliance is a requirement. You don't have an option in that. You have to cover that one way or the other, and your registration fees certainly are a requirement for you to be registered and do this legally. But there are a very long list of things that are technically and legally optional. Now, are you going to be able to run your practice successfully enough to retain and grow your client base without them? Well, that's going to be something you're going to have to decide for yourself as a part of this process. But things like, you know, website, business cards, office space, printer, computer, technology, even the phone bill and the internet bill, HR services. I mean, this is a really, you know, a pretty long list of things. Financial planning software, portfolio reporting and billing software. These can be, you know, they can range from $20 a month to, you know, several $1,000s a year, depending on specifically what we're talking about. But one thing I will say, something I've observed here and there, I don't think this is something that I run into all the time, but I do think a lot of times advisors may be a little bit deceived at what exactly they're getting from their current firm. I see a lot of advisors that may stay where they're at because they have this really cool financial planning software, they have this really cool tool that they think is proprietary to their firm, when it's actually just that your firm has a licensing agreement with the software provider themselves and they've white labeled it to that to your firm. And in reality, you could take that exact same software and have access to it for $200-$300 a month. So you'll need to do a little bit of homework on what exactly you're currently using at your firm. What is the software underneath all these layers of branding, and can you get access to it? How much is it going to cost to get access to it? And is it going to be the same version that your clients are accustomed to? And also, how portable is the data that's there now? If you're an employee now, there's a good chance you're not going to be able to take that data with you, but at least your client's going to have access to the same software that they're accustomed to. And a lot of times this isn't as expensive as you might think it is. I will say portfolio reporting and billing software, these can be pretty expensive. I hesitate to give too much of a quote on this because I think my data may be a little bit outdated and I need to do some research here. But even a few years ago, this was $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 a year. And I think that in some levels of their reporting, it can be quite a bit more than that, depending on how many advisors you have and what your AUM is. There's a lot of different ways that they can be billed. If you are getting into those types of expenses, those can be a pretty significant bite of the apple when it comes to your expenses. But they're also not necessarily required. I had an RIA for 7 years, never paid for a third-party performance reporting or billing software because, frankly, I'd gotten handy enough with Excel that I could do a lot of things internally for myself without having to use these third-party tools. And I just did the math on how much time I was spending each month putting together these reports, and did the math and realized that the software was coming out to be like $500 an hour for what I was spending my own time to put these things together. So I didn't bother. But if your clients are accustomed to that, then you may have to spring for it. So some of these can start to get pretty expensive. Office space can certainly start to get expensive if you're trying to go out and build out your own space, but it may not be quite as expensive as you think. And this isn't really a new phenomenon. I think most advisors know about these types of things, but these corporate office suites that you can basically pay a monthly fee to have access to an office suite with 40 or 50 other professionals in it can be $50-$100 a month. And now you do get to put that as your registered address. That's where your mail goes. And you can kind of drop in and drop out as you need to. If you wanted to rent a conference room for the day or even an office space for the day, a lot of times you may be able to do that way more cost effectively than going out and having your own full-time office space. And especially in the post-COVID world, a lot of advisors who have office space aren't actually using it. They're not showing up to work unless they have a client meeting. So when you're looking at office space, you may want to take a look at how many meetings do I have per year and call around a little bit and see how much it would cost for you to have access to a virtual office space in your area and see what the daily rate is to rent a space for the day. And you might be surprised that it might be $20,000 a year for you to have office space where you are, but when you're only going to use it 3 times a month, you may be able to replicate that for, you know, dimes or quarters on the dollar by using one of these executive suite solutions instead. Pricing on that is going to be pretty localized to your real estate market, so I'm not going to get into the quotes on that, but I would definitely call around or just Google executive office suites in your hometown, see who the providers are, and call around, get some quotes on that, because that may be a great solution. And frankly, with those solutions, most of your clients are never going to know that that's not your full-time office space. And I don't mean to say that in a shady, manipulative kind of way. I'm just saying that it's on your business card, it's on your website, it's your registered address with the state regulators. And when they want to meet with you, they meet you there. And the days that you don't have meetings, you work from home. That's really no different than a lot of other advisors nowadays anyway. Especially in the post-COVID world, you can get by with these executive office spaces, and they can be a really seamless way to solve your real estate solution. After COVID, a lot of advisors are just going ahead and saying, look, I'm a virtual advisor, I work from home. Clients are okay with that a lot of times. So that's a question you're going to have to sort of ask yourself, you know, based on your clients. But real estate is certainly going to be a huge factor in what the economics look like, because if you're dropping $25,000 a year and you only have a $5 million book of business, you're down to a 50% payout right there, right? So it can be a big deal. Or if you have a $50 million practice and you can work from home, real estate doesn't really matter, right? If you are an advisor who needs real estate and you really do need that local presence, then I think a tuck-in option is going to make a lot of sense for a lot of advisors. And I've talked about the tuck-in model enough on other shows that I won't dwell on it too much here. But what I define as a tuck-in is a team of independent advisors that are sharing resources and sharing office space and sort of operating as one unit. Sometimes these will even offer you the opportunity to operate under your own brand. You know, you can have ABC Financial and plug into XYZ Financial's local team, and you will get economies of scale when it comes to real estate, HR support, and a variety of other things as well. So those local tuck-ins may make a lot of sense for you if you are looking for office space. If you're not, or if you're a big enough practice to absorb the real estate cost, then you have a few different options, and we're kind of back to the typical question of, okay, do you register as an independent RIA or do you join a turnkey RIA? So for the math of figuring out the ultimate question here, which is how big do I need to be an independent advisor? And I'm not necessarily saying an independent RIA. I'm just saying how big do you need to be to break away and go independent, so to speak. Well, if you're going the RIA route, you're going to have to cover your compliance, you're going to have to cover your E&O, and you're going to have to cover any of these other optional add-ons that is going to be necessary to operate your practice. So if you're operating your practice on essentially a shoestring budget, minimal technology costs, no staff, you don't need real estate, you may be able to register as an RIA, spend a couple $1,000s a year in fees to be registered in your state and any other states you need to be in. And now you're kind of off to the races. So if you need to make $100,000 a year, you can probably take an $11 million practice, bill your clients 1%, it's $110,000, pay your E&O, pay your licensing fees, pay your phone and internet, which you're probably paying for anyway if you're working from home, and you're netting, you know, $102,000, $103,000 off an $11 million book of business. If you need office space and you need access to expensive portfolio reporting and financial planning software, you might want to look at some of the turnkey RIAs that includes a lot of these things. That may include even your errors and omissions insurance. It may include portfolio reporting and billing. It may even include access to financial planning software. And again, if you want to even look at the tuck-in solutions, it may even include real estate. So depending on the size of your practice, it might make a lot of sense to explore your options a little bit if you are needing some of these additional services or some of these additional value adds for your clients to replicate what they are accustomed to. So once you kind of zeroed in on, okay, based on that inventory of everything that I'm going to need, now you're going to start to do some math problems, right? So if you need $100,000 a year of income, you have a simple enough practice that you can register with your local state regulator, run your practice from your house with minimal technology, then you can probably start your own independent practice with a $11 million book, bill 1% to your clients on average, have $110,000 of revenue, pay $4,000 for your E&O, a couple thousand for licensing registration fees, a couple thousand for phone and internet, which you're probably already paying for anyway if you're working from home, and easily walk away with $100,000 a year of income. If you need office space, or if you need portfolio reporting and billing, or if you need this financial planning software or that financial planning software or access to this custodian or whatnot, now you're going to need to look at, okay, the real estate is going to cost $12,000 a year. The reporting software is going to cost another $8,000 a year. And you're just going to start to stack these line items up. And pretty much for every $10,000 worth of expenses, you're going to need another $1 million in AUM, right? Simple enough math there. So if you do all this and you realize that you have $50,000 of expenses that you're going to have as an independent advisor, and you're going to register your own RIA, you're going to need $15 million in AUM to be able to run your practice. But as you start to add on some of these other things, you might want to start to reconsider, do I really need to be my own RIA right now, or do I want to join a turnkey RIA, or maybe even tuck in with a local independent RIA that may offer a team-based model? To give you some comparisons here, if you want to plug into a turnkey RIA, I know for a fact, 100%, that there are firms out there that will offer a 75% payout on your revenue, that will include financial planning software, they'll include your registration fees, they'll include all of your, you know, your technology costs, your email, everything that you need. And some of them will even offer and provide access to things like web design and some of these other services that you needed as an advisor or as a part of their offering, and you will net about 75%. Now, that's not typically going to cover your office space. There are some situations that you might be able to find office space, or some maybe partner up with another branch or another advisor within their network. But if you want to work from home, but you need access to certain technology or certain tools, or maybe you just don't really trust yourself to run the compliance, plugging in to these turnkeys is definitely cheaper than hiring a chief compliance officer, and you're going to be much more insulated from the regulators than you would be otherwise. When you take all of the things that you're going to need and compare what that cost is to, say, 25% of your revenue for a $10 million practice, if 25% of your revenue ends up being less than what it would cost you to plug into a turnkey, then you should just plug into the turnkey. They're still going to let you run your own independent practice. They're still going to stay out of your way. You're still going to have your own branding. But you're taking all of the expenses that you are spending on one hand, and you're getting them bundled over here with the turnkey for less. So if that's the path that you're going, and again, you need a $100,000 a year income, you take the $100,000 of income, divide it by the 75% true net payout that you're getting out of everything, and that lands somewhere around the $13, $14 million AUM range, and you can have your own independent practice, make $100,000 a year, and not have to deal with your compliance or your state regulators. Or if you need that office space, you can find a local independent team, plug yourself into what they're doing. You can use their branding and be, you know, featured on their website, use their office space, use their business cards, use everything that they have as an independent advisor of their firm, and get a 70, 75, 80% payout. Now, as your revenue scales up, your payouts are going to scale up quite a bit as well, especially in the turnkey space. So where you might be at a true net payout of 75% on $100,000, you might be at 80 or 85% on a $200,000 or $250,000 practice. And if you're at $50 million, you may be able to be at a 90 or 92% payout. So the math starts to change drastically when your practice gets bigger, because as you scale your practice up, these flat fee expenses, you know, portfolio reporting software and the financial planning software and even your office space is getting divided into a larger and larger number, so your net income is going higher and higher and higher. It becomes exponentially easier to start a practice and make what you need to make the bigger you get. That's pretty self-explanatory. I don't think that surprises anybody. But I do think it may surprise some advisors when you figure out that, okay, I've got a $200,000 practice and my firm is taking 60% of that, so I'm netting $80,000. Now, can I replicate what they're providing me for $120,000 a year? Yeah, you can run a pretty good practice for $120,000 a year, and there is a reason that they're offering you this. They're making a profit on it. So by cutting out that employer, yeah, you usually can net significantly higher, assuming that you can keep all your clients. And that's obviously going to be the last thing you're going to want to ask yourself, is how many of my clients are going to stay with me, right? And that can be a really tricky part of this equation, because you may have a $25 million book of business and you need $100,000 a year to live off of. And if you're at an employee type role, that's what you're making now anyway. So all you've got to really do is keep 40% of your clients to be breaking even, right? Or maybe 45 or 50% to account for expenses. But if you lose 50% of your clients in the process, or 70% of your clients in the process, are you going to be able to still survive? And what are your contingency plans? And there is some aspect of that, and there's going to be some point of no return where you're going to have to vet your clients a little bit and at least throw out some test language to them, so to speak, to see if they are sticky to you, and are they really going to stick around with you, or are they more loyal to the mothership, so to speak, and are they going to stay where they're at if you were to leave and go elsewhere? Or if you were to leave and go elsewhere, would they take that as an opportunity to transfer to their brother-in-law who just got in the industry, or to move their account to the guy that they play golf with, or whatever the case may be? Getting a good handle on how sticky your clients are is probably the most important part of this process, and maybe that's where I should have started the show. But you have to kind of take your existing book, carve out what you know is going to stay with you, probably reduce that another 20%, just because as advisors we tend to be a little bit overconfident sometimes in our ability to keep our clients. So is 80% of what you think you're going to be able to keep going to be able to support all of these expenses? Taking that math and running it through starting your own RIA and paying for your own compliance costs, taking that math and running it through plugging into a turnkey RIA, or taking that math and plugging it into a local tuck-in model, depending on what your situation calls for. By applying that process, you can kind of gross your way into figuring out how big of a practice you need to have to be able to afford to go independent. And frankly, if you can live off a shoestring budget and you don't have, I mean, I know advisors who have started their own practices with $5 million in AUM because they weren't spending a lot of money, they had sticky clients, and they had backup plans if it went sideways. So you can go independent with a very small client list and a very small amount of AUM, and especially if you think that your model is going to be something that can grow very quickly, because all of this math is really just at the starting point, right? The really cool thing of being independent is the next $5 million, $10 million, $20 million is all going to be at a much higher payout to you, between 75, 80, 90, even 100% if you are your own RIA. If your business plan and what you're planning to do with your own independent firm that you're not able to do right now is going to allow you to add $15, $20, $30 million in AUM that you aren't able to do in your current environment, that new AUM is going to very quickly grow you out of the hole. Because if you're making $100,000 now in the employee side and you want to double your income and make another $100,000 a year, you're going to have to add $25 million to make $100,000 worth of income. That's not true on the independent side. At 100% revenue payout, an extra $100,000 a year is another $10 million in AUM. So you are able to grow at a much, much faster rate as an independent. So even if you do take a small hit on the front end, for every $10 million that you leave behind at your former firm, you're only going to need to get $4 million back to replace the income that you lost off of that, right? So if you are an advisor who's still in a position to grow fairly easily, or if what you're building as an independent is going to help you grow a lot faster, or even at the same rate, it may make a whole lot of sense to do that, because once you've covered those startup expenses or those flat expenses, you're keeping 100% of the revenue. So, you know, $10 million of new assets is the equivalent of what $25 million used to be in the old environment. So it may make a lot of sense if you can afford it. I hope this show will help you kind of understand a little bit better insight into the process of figuring out whether or not you can afford it. I wish I could do a show that would say, hey, look, this is the minimum amount that you need to start your own independent firm. It's just not that simple, because every firm is going to be unique. Every advisor is going to be unique. Every family has a unique budget, and what their spending needs are going to be, right? So it is going to vary, but hopefully this episode will at least help to lay out the questions that you should be asking yourself so that you can arrive at your own answer when it comes to asking yourself the question of how much you need to have an AUM to be able to go independent. As always, if I can help you with any of these questions, always happy to help and would love to chat with you if you want to reach out. My number is in the description below, 919-561-2436. Send me an email to garrett@theadvisoradvocates.com, or reach out on the website and schedule a call at theadvisoradvocates.com/connect. And I would love to chat with you if I can help. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you're on YouTube, see you later. Hope to talk to you soon.